Okay, well, I'd now like to introduce our master of ceremonies for this series, Chris Adams. He's program manager on the Microsoft Web Platform and Tools team. And Chris has been working on the Microsoft Internet Information Server product for 5 years. He's currently certified as an MCP, an MCSA, and MCSE on the Windows NT 4.0, Windows 2000 server. And he specializes in IIS versions 4.0, 5.0, 6.0, and the upcoming IIS 7.0. And with that, Chris, it's all yours.
Awesome. Thank you there, Jason. I appreciate that introduction. And welcome, everybody, to the continuation of the IIS webcast series. And nothing more powerful than what we're presenting to you this week in form of bringing the Microsoft.com's operations. We have some smart folks over there, and we somehow roped them in and lassoed them in to present in the IIS webcast series a great series of webcasts. We started yesterday with an overall high architecture overview of how Microsoft.com is architected on the IIS front, as well as diving a little bit into SQL Server. Man, we're going to follow it up today with some good stuff. Configuration management of web farms with Microsoft.com's operation. Jeff Taves is a senior systems engineer at MSCom, and he can certainly be reached using the blogs that you see listed here. But with that said, Jeff, take it over and teach us a little bit about configuration management of web farms over there at Microsoft.com.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for the flattering intro. Yeah, the webcast yesterday, the high availability architecture chat with a couple other engineers in our team, Chad and Brad, was a really great session. And I believe these webcasts are archived for later viewing. So if any of you tuned in today and missed yesterday's chat, maybe Chris or George or one of the MCs can point you through that towards the tail end of this presentation. But today I will be chatting about configuration and management of web farms in Microsoft.com. I'm a senior systems engineer in the Microsoft.com web team. And just to give you a little overview, Microsoft has a couple main operations teams. There's MSN has their operations group. They're a much larger group than us. They have about 800 folks. We're a relatively small team, so process and configuration management and really making sure that we have, you know, efficient steps to build, you know, and configure and test and monitor our web servers is fairly important as we're running with a, you know, relatively small web team. So today I am going to give a brief introduction to the MSCom operations picture, just to give you a glimpse of, you know, the scale and the types of sites that we run. I'm going to discuss IIS 6 and some of the key benefits it's brought to Microsoft.com web team. I'm going to delve into configuration management, just exactly how does Microsoft.com build our web servers, what are the key steps in that process. I'm going to touch on configuration scripting. One of the key points I'm going to try to make today is that scripting is just by far the, you know, one of the most critical tasks a systems engineer can have. It's scripting any configuration changes is going to save a ton of time, and the most critical thing is it ensures consistent web server builds, right? You know, if you're troubleshooting, you know, you don't want to, you know, have to try to figure out which box is different or, you know, guess that the configurations are identical or not. So I'm going to go into some scripting, do a brief demo, and if you guys have any questions regarding any of the demos or if you'd like to see any other items, definitely, you know, during the course of the presentation, don't hesitate to fire up some questions. We've got some teammates standing by to help answer. We're going to talk about the actual steps toward taking this scripted configuration and deploying it to the production web servers. And finally, I'm going to touch on, just very briefly, some of the management scripting techniques. Basically, scripting that doesn't, you know, result in an actual configuration change that allows you to manage a server through scripting. Then we'll have some resources at the very tail end of the webcast that actually point you to some utilities and information sources for, you know, a little more in-depth research you can do. Okay, well, let's get underway. MSCom, that's my team. We've got a web server team, a database team of engineers. We've got, you know, a debug team. we've got a number of different components to our organization. And I, like I said, I'm a member of the web server team. I mostly focus my time on the site www.microsoft.com. And here's some just, you know, sort of an overview of our enterprise in Microsoft.com. We run a whole pile of websites, over 100 websites, a lot of databases, countless web applications. We actually host, you know, web applications for all Microsoft subsidiaries internationally, all the different product teams, different, you know, corporate groups and whatnot. The Microsoft.com operations team really is responsible for some of the busiest IIS-based websites on the internet. And some of the host names you might be familiar with that we manage include www.microsoft.com, Windows Update, MSDN, TechNet, Microsoft Downloads, and many, many more. The www.microsoft.com website alone accounts for daily activity of more than 70 million page views, which result in more than 10,000 HTTP requests per second. That capacity is distributed over 80 identically configured www.microsoft.com web servers that are broken out into 10 network load balance or NLB clusters. There's 8 servers per NLB cluster. The resulting infrastructure is positioned in 2 regionally distributed data centers for redundancy. From an IIS 6 configuration perspective, the www.microsoft.com website includes more than 350 virtual routes and 190 web applications broken out into 12 application pools. Although the total number of application pools and the location of the different web apps changes periodically due to some of the factors I'm going to discuss in a couple of slides ahead. So these are some of the overall numbers. Definitely a lot of high-capacity websites here, and it's actually quite exciting to work here, personally speaking. So IIS 6, one of the best things that ever happened to me as a web engineer was meeting IIS 6. IIS 6 introduced the concept of application pools and the worker process isolation model. This was quite a huge architectural improvement over previous IIS versions. Worker process isolation mode loads application code, for example, ASP or ASP.NET applications, into the worker process only. By isolating application code in the worker process, this application isolation mode ensures a reliable environment for an app server. The WWW service, IIS admin service, and HTTP.sys can run continuously despite any service interruptions that occur in an individual worker process. Also, web applications or sites running in the worker process are not affected by failures in other worker processes because they are isolated from each other through operating system process boundaries. Worker process isolation mode uses all of the new IIS6 core components and supports application pooling, recycling, and health monitoring features, which gives app web administrators like myself and yourself the ability to fully isolate applications from one another in separate processes. So some of the MSCOM application pool lessons that we've learned during the adoption and resulting sort of configuration of IIS 6 are highlighted on the slide you're seeing right now. So the key takeaway is by creating new application pools and assigning applications to them, it's quite easy to make your web server more efficient and reliable, as well as making your other applications always available, even when the worker process serving the new application pool has problems. This architectural feature of IIS 6 had an immediate and significant impact on the availability of Microsoft.com. Definitely Chad and Brad touched upon that yesterday in the high availability chat. And this is because our homepage and other critical dial tone applications could now be separated from other code that previously could take down these applications. Microsoft.com divides application pools based on the trust level of the code being placed in each app pool. In other words, we place trusted code and untrusted code in separate application pools.
We define trusted code as web applications that have gone through a formal software design lifecycle within the Microsoft.com team. Untrusted code includes everything else, including code that has been developed by other content providers throughout Microsoft and its partner and subsidiary organizations. We're not necessarily sure exactly what rigorous testing methods have been applied to it, so we can isolate it and make sure that it doesn't impact some of the other applications whose behavior is known and whose, you know, testing and performance characteristics are well known to us. This may or may not be the way you choose to divide your application pools. You may find that separating application pools by customer, by application, or by some other means more useful for your organization. So during our adoption, early adoption of Windows Server 2003, Microsoft.com worked really closely with the Windows High Availability team to quantify the impact of the architectural changes introduced by these new products. The MSDN.microsoft.com site was a really interesting study. This site ran for a couple of months with some of its clusters upgraded to Windows Server 2003 IIS6, while some remained configured with Windows Server 2000, Service Pack 3, and IIS5. And one look at the chart on the slide that you're seeing clearly shows the dramatic improvement in uptime that these new platforms provided. The single biggest reason for the reduction in restarts of IIS is the worker process isolation model of IIS6. Under IIS6, application configuration changes or problems with applications, i.e. memory leaks, bad code, etc., can be dealt with by simply recycling the application pool that the particular application or site lives inside instead of restarting the entire web server as was required in previous versions of IIS 5 and 4, you know, the IIS restart that used to be so common. That's definitely a thing of the past now, with the ability to isolate applications and restart their individual app pool. So, configuration management. This is getting to the heart of the presentation. Just exactly how does Microsoft.com operations build a web server? The data center that houses our web servers and databases applies the initial operating system IIS image to the web server. Microsoft.com partners really closely with Windows, IIS, the .NET team, and SQL teams to early adopt, provide feedback on, and help debug all their products. MSCom was running Windows Server 2003 on www.microsoft.com 2 full years prior to its public RTM launch. And just to kick your interest, we'll be starting to run Longhorn Server on some www.microsoft.com servers before the end of 2005. Once the data center is finished applying the initial OS and IIS image to the web server, they install a standard suite of software known as the IPath, which includes driver and firmware updates, operating system web server hotfixes, security updates, antivirus, various utilities, a standard suite of software that gets applied to all web servers. Then the next step is the application of a global MSCom build script. This global MSCom web server build script is run to configure global operating system and IIS settings, which includes, you know, security hardening and performance tuning values. It also includes other global components such as the .NET framework. The final step of building a Microsoft.com web server is a site-specific build script. So, for example, www.microsoft.com would have a different site-specific build script than MSDN. And, again, it runs to configure OS and IIS settings and helps maintain consistency, again, in the rollout of new systems. The site-specific build scripts include such things as installation of private hotfixes for Windows, .NET, IIS, TCP/IP, NLB, etc., that are received directly from these product teams. So we test these privates for the various product teams, and if these private fixes function as expected in the MSCom environment, then they get rolled into future versions via service packs, etc., of these products. The site-specific build scripts also install site-specific components, so scheduled tasks, ODD, CDSN, SSL certificates, performance mon,
monitor setup and logging, custom event logs, NTFS file system permissions, passports, components, etc. It also configures the site-specific applications. So this is configuration outside of application code in the web root. So it includes things such as shared DLLs in the global assembly cache for the .NET framework, registry settings, custom event log sources, etc. Finally, it tattoos IS configuration onto the site-specific box. So we have vroot, web application creation and configuration, XAPI filter installation, custom errors, app pool creation, web service extension restriction list, script maps, IS logging, SMTP config, MIME types, etc. Pardon me. And the last thing it does is configure the .NET framework. And .NET framework, if you're familiar with it, is configured using the configuration file model. So this configuration simply involves configuring and then copying out the system machine.config and the root web config. The root web config has been introduced with .NET 2.0 or codenamed Windy. So that's fairly handy to be able to copy configuration files. And in fact, the IS6 configuration story, and I'll touch on this a couple of times, scripting is definitely much more necessary under IS6 than in IS7. And we've been getting sneak previews and working closely with the IS team in some of the feature sets and some of the design and functional requirements. And when IS7 launches, we'll then be able to simply configure an application host.config file, similar to the way that we configure a machine config file for the .NET framework, and simply copy this application host.config file to all web servers, and this is just going to make IS configuration management a lot easier. So that's coming. But until that arrives, the need for scripting is definitely important. Okay, so the baseline script I touched upon, in some of the very specific things it configures, include, just global, max connection settings, connection timeouts, TCP bindings, 80 and 443, HTTP keep alive, standard web root, web logging, IS permissions, global app pool settings, really settings that we want to make sure are just set as default across our environment. And of course, these can be overridden by the site-specific build script, which, basically tattoos a whole pile of, more site-specific application configuration and IS and especially .NET framework. A lot of security hardenings are very unique to the site-specific build script. A specific file you want to be able to allow to be downloaded. You can definitely lock down security-wise on a site-specific basis, depending on the characteristics of that box. That's something I've already touched upon. And now let's get into, the core of this presentation is the configuration scripting. And earlier we discussed the process through which MSCOM configures new web servers, but just how do we deploy these changes across these Windows Server 2003 IS6 web farms once the servers are configured? And the key is scripting. In the case of relatively large websites such as www.microsoft.com, it's just not reasonable to open sessions to each server and manually make changes on each machine. Using the computer management and whatnot. We've got 80 boxes, depending on the size of your site. It's going to take, it could take a long time to manually make these changes. And, when you're manually making changes, you also open up the possibility of inconsistent configuration. So scripting is the means, by which MSCOM efficiently deploys configuration changes and can deploy these configuration changes remotely if needed across multiple machines. Once a configuration change has been deployed to production's websites via scripting, it is then added to either the global or site-specific build scripts that I just mentioned, as appropriate so that the machines built in the future will also be configured with this setting. Okay, so the adsutil.vbs utility. Once again, many of the existing IS scripting paths stem from the fact that until IS 7 releases, IS metabase replication has not been very easy, especially for a distributed multi-cluster environment such as www.microsoft.com. But luckily, IS comes with a handy script called adsutil.vbs that you can use to automate the administration of your website. Adsutil.vbs is a super versatile generic script which ships with IS 6 that lets you programmatically perform many common IS administrative tasks on both local and remote servers. From my personal opinion, if you're going to learn how to use only one IS script right now, adsutil.vbs is a great choice. At the tail end of this presentation, see the documentation outlined in the adsutil.vbs resources for the complete list of commands, along with the proper syntax. Adsutil.vbs uses VBScript along with Active Directory Service Interfaces, or ADSI, to manipulate the IIS server configurations and modify the IIS metadata. Adsutil requires use of a Windows script host. This means you'll need to preface each command with cscript.exe or configure WSH to run cscript as a default script host. To configure cscript as a default script host running in interactive mode as well as disable the normal banner, you can use the following command, and I'm going to highlight it here for us. This running this command from the command prompt will configure cscript as a default script host and allow you to just type in adsutil.vbs without the need for typing cscript every time. So use adsutil.vbs set and delete functions with caution, as the metabase is not backed up prior to running adsutil.vbs. And this utility really does allow you to make IS changes very easily. So just a note of caution. An important point is to avoid security problems with this utility, it's a good practice not to store adsutil.vbs or any other administrative scripts on production web servers. A better approach is to store these scripts in a location that only administrators can access, such as a central remote utilities share that's set up in a system path on each server. Also, to perform most of the functions possible with adsutil.vbs, you must be an administrator. Okay, so the primary commands available in adsutil.vbs include enum, which enumerates all parameters for a given metadata path, get, which displays only a single parameter, step, which assigns a new value to a specific parameter, and delete, which deletes a given path or parameter. Let's dig into a few specific examples that you'll perform using adsutil.vbs. So, some of the key ways in which we use this very valuable utility involve modifying IIS properties such as application pools. A key feature of IIS 6, as I mentioned earlier. And now we're going to go into how do we, configure these application pools? How do we, move our applications around from application pool to application pool as our capacity needs dictate or troubleshooting scenarios would require? So we use scripting to form these, some of these key tasks on the slide in front of you. Creating new application pools, migrating application pool memberships, and other properties of application pools such as recycling thresholds. So creating a new application pool. We'll go into a demo here. I'm just going to, briefly cover in a few slides some of the various utilities, and I'll hop on a box. Actually, I'll hop on a live WW web server and show a brief demo of how we can make use of these handy scripting utilities. I'll outline them real quickly. So creation of a new application pool is as simple as using the ADC pill create command. And the command you see up here on the screen, ADC pill create, allows you to specify where it says app pool underscore name, the new name of the application pool, and then the IS application pool property. And if you just leave it at that, it'll create that application pool on the local server that this command is run on. If you wish to create the application pool on a remote server, the dash S switch, which I don't believe is included in the ADC pill help, but believe me, it's one of the most commonly used flags when you're administering multiple remote servers. A lot of people specify the name of a remote server. So, to run the above command remotely across multiple servers, as I just mentioned, the four slash F command. The four is a very handy built-in command that allows you to program flow logic from your command line, command prompt. And so the slash F flag allows you to specify a file. So the specific file in question is this C servers.txt, which has a space-delimited listing of the various remote servers that you'd like to run a particular command on. And each of those server names in this text file essentially get replace this percent %i variable in the server name, the remote server name flag. So this the same command that we saw above, the ADC util vds create command, is actually then run on each of the remote servers listed in the servers.txt file, and they're just variables that are passed again to this dash s flag. So very handy utility, the four command. There's a few other switches that we use a fair bit with. The slash L option allows you to specify a series, could be that server name, that increment. In this case, you know, the 1, 2, and 3 here in the server names listed, you could fill in the server name and make them variable, just the series of increasing numbers to identify a group of consecutive servers. So look up, do a four slash question mark in your command line. One of the most important utilities that we make use of in order to make sure that changes get pushed across multiple servers. So viewing app pool properties, you've got app pools that are out there and on your website, and you want to, know exactly what the properties are. Maybe you need to, you're troubleshooting or you're interested in, just pulling up the multiple servers and making sure the values are consistent. Whatnot. ADS util enum, as I mentioned, enumerates the, a whole set of properties specified at a particular metadata node. So in this case, the command, ADS util enum command, is actually pulling up data that's specified at the app pools node in the metadata. So this is at the app pools node, it's global app pool configuration applies to all app pools that are consist on the server. They're actually nested below app pools on the web server. And once again, the dash S flag allows you to enumerate the app pool configuration information on a remote server. Then down below, the way to enum configuration information for a particular app pool, as I mentioned, this involves running the same enum command, but running it on the specific app pool nested below the app pools in the metadata, and that allows you to get more granular app pool information that may be specified at a lower spot in the metadata. So migrating web pool web app pool membership on an IIS server is super simple with the ADS util command. Instead of going into the GUI on an individual box, hopping on an app pool, right-clicking on its properties, and pulling the drop-down and selecting a particular app pool, and then repeating times the number of boxes you have, just rifle through this task using the ADS util set command. This command I've got up here on the screen, I'll highlight it, allows you to, for a specific web application that you've configured in IIS, configure its AppPool ID property. That's where the AppPool membership is actually set. So, typing in, so there's actually a space between AppPool ID and the AppPool name here. And it instantly will migrate that web application to run in the worker process of this new application pool. Maybe just to clarify, I know I've got the information on the screen here, the path that follows these ASU control commands like set and enum, the W3SBC, that actually tells the script to access the web server, okay? It's the highest level of the metadata, okay? The one tells the script that you're, that you're interested in modifying properties in the first website on that server. So if you have multiple websites on your box, there'd be multiple numbers. And I think the way it works under IS6 is that, the first one's one, and then any additional websites you create have these, large, numeric values. And that value can just be obtained from, doing actually any enum on the ADC code enum on W3SBC, and you'll see all your different, specific websites that exist. And then root is the absolute top level of that specific website. Right? So we're just basically walking down as we go from W3SBC to 1 to root. We're walking down the metadata to the particular property in the metadata that we're interested in enumerating, or setting, or deleting, or getting. Okay, and once again, all these commands, they're all used, the dash F command, to be run remotely. So, app pool recycle thresholds. Quite, we could have a whole presentation alone on just how these thresholds are set, the tuning involved. By default, IIS6 application tools are configured to recycle based on elapsed server uptime. In MSCOM, however, we've modified our AppPool recycling settings to be based on virtual memory limits. This is due to the large volume of traffic and the characteristics of the code we have running in each of the application pools on Microsoft.com. In our configuration, a recycle of an application pool occurs when the application pool reaches a virtual memory threshold of 2 gigabytes. This is a value that changes periodically. Just remember that our MSCOM settings are tuned to our specific environment. In your environment, you'll need to track the trends in your site performance using Performance Monitor, Server Performance Analyzer, or SPA. It's an amazing utility that allows you to get the value of a team of debuggers in a single application. Based on analysis that these tools can help provide, you can adjust your app pool recycling settings appropriately. It's important to use the event log to actually view the application pool cycling events. And if you see your application pool cycling too frequently, for instance, that's an indication that it's not a very healthy state of affairs to have your app pools cycling or thrashing. We've gotten into that state a few times when we've had, poor code in a particular application pool. And what that means is application pools recycling too quickly is that, you lose all the benefits of caching. Because if an application pool is recycling every 20 minutes or half an hour, it has to, reinitialize ASP.NET, rebuild the cache, recompile all assemblies that are loaded within that application and that worker process, and that's a processor-intensive task. So you want to hit that sweet spot where your application pools are, just living long enough that you get the benefits of caching, and you hopefully don't see your virtual memory leaking too quickly. And if you do, you've got a problem with your application, and that requires some debugging tasks.
Hey, Jeff, quick question. This is Chris. I was just curious at Microsoft.com, out of curiosity, you mentioned that you have that long lag time when you recycle and have a new application come up with a CLR. What does Microsoft.com do to fire up? Do you do any pre-fetching, like before you throw things into the BIP? What I mean is to make the content hot, or is that done on your live production network?
So you're talking about the inertia associated with starting applications?
Yeah, absolutely. The .NET framework takes a while for you to fire up. Do you do any, anything to pre-initialize your cache is what I guess I'm coming across saying.
We don't actually, Chris. We do, I guess to a certain degree we do. We do have monitoring tests that run on every application pool has, specific, monitoring tests that test, you know, the low level, you know, Hello World ASP and Hello World, you know, ASPX engines, right? And on a per application pool basis. So while the box is out of production, being configured, these application monitoring tests in each individual application pool have spun up that worker process associated with that application pool. And, so I guess that is a form of warming up the server, right? Since this monitoring goes on whether or not the box is drained or in production, right?
Okay.
So our monitoring tools, in essence, do warm up the servers. Without that, as you know, the .NET framework, the very first request, there's definitely a sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, everybody asked that question, and I was curious, in as busy as your farms are, if you did something prior to production. It sounds like you do to get the CLR loaded at minimum, and then put it into the VIF so that it's ready to go when it hits the live production.
Yeah,
it sounds like it. Cool. Thanks for answering that question.
Hey, no problem. Okay, so let's get into some brief demos, just to show you, nothing super dramatic, but I'm going to pull up here an actual live www.microsoft.com web server, and just walk through some of the tasks that we've just discussed in these previous scripting slides. And you can see some of the commands I've got here in a text file. So let's walk through creating an application pool. So simply, from the command line, we can just create a brand new application pool. And once again, you see the path on the screen here. We're talking to the web server. We're talking to the app pools node in the metabase. And below that app pools node, we're going to create a new app pool called test app pool. And the standard property that you need to supply with the create command for an app pool is IS application pool. You'll see that if you ever look in the metabase. So let's run this guy here. Once again, this is a production web server. And you see the ADSPBuild command that has fired up. And we've created this brand new test app pool. And just to show you, we're actually taking load and do a quick next add here, and you can see that we've got 3,400 connections that are connected to port 80 on this www.microsoft.com web server. Again, this is one of 80 web servers taking traffic, and we've created a brand new app pool. So let's take a look at this app pool. So let's do the ADSPBuild enum command that I mentioned, where we're gonna pull up all the app pools on this box. And if you actually take a look here, so you can actually see here that we are actually running 64-bit servers. We're actually running, currently, we're not running full native mode 64-bit. We're running IS and ASP.NET are still 32-bit applications in a 64-bit W3WP.exe process. But you see the listing of app pools here. And we've just added to that listing here, test app pool. It's a brand new app pool, and I should be clear that we've created this app pool below app pool, and we haven't actually specified any unique values in terms of app pool configuration to test app pool. It's actually, because we've created below app pools, it's inherited the configuration properties of the app pools node in the metadata. I guess the other thing I want to show you before we get to the next step of the demo is, let's type this out here real quick, is the IIS app command allows you to, So the IIS app is a VBS script supplied with IIS that allows you to map the actual worker process PID, the process identification number, with the associated app pool. And you can see the app pools that we enumerated up above here. all of those app pools actually have associated a PID here that indicates that they are running, that their worker process is spun up and it's taking requests. And we've created this test application pool, but because we haven't assigned any web applications to this app pool yet, it's not actually taking load. And until it takes load, we're not going to see the worker process or the W3WP exe spun up for that app pool. So let's assign our web app to this brand new app pool and watch it take load. So
while you're doing that, Jeff, if you don't mind, I'm going to interject something real quick about IaaS app that a lot of folks don't know happened in Service Pack 1, and that is not only can it list what you see as the PID, but it also gives you a new switch, a /R. So you now can recycle based on PID or by the Apple ID. So it gives you a command line interface to really be able to recycle an app pool, which you really couldn't do without writing your own code on Windows 2K3 and RTM. So just wanted to interject that and let people know that's another powerful feature that came with FP1.
Yeah, that's a handy bit of info. Thanks, Chris. I supply the script that we in Microsoft.com created using Windows Management Interface, or WMI, to actually remotely recycle web applications.
And that's the one downfall. That's a great point that unfortunately we didn't get into IaaS app, is the ability to connect to the server and actually from a remote location and recycle that. So that'd be something great that we could share with the audience, Jeff, that you guys have, that they could take and immediately take advantage of, which is by connecting remotely, recycling an app pool, because it's one of the more popular things that IT professionals like to do.
Absolutely, very commonly used script. And we actually supply that in a download slide at the tail end of this webcast. There's actually a link that you can go to download a couple of different scripts that we've created in Microsoft.com and this one script called recycleapppool.vbs. Very handy utility. So we'll mention that in a little while. But thanks, Chris. Definitely a good point. So we've seen the output of the IaaS app here. We know that the worker process associated with this app pool is not yet spun up. So let's type in adctil enum w3fbc. Let's take the Windows application. Let's get w3fbc WAC 1 WAC root WAC Windows WAC app pool ID. Okay, so we want to see where's Windows currently mapped to app pool wise, and so like I said, get is allows you to pull a specific value out of the metadata. If I would have enumed Windows, it would have dumped out app pool ID along with a whole ton of other properties associated with that node in the metadata. So I just wanted to granularly pluck out the app pool ID. That's why I use the get flag, and you can see that the app pool ID for Windows is an app pool called Windows. That was the one we listed out here above. Well, let's take Windows. Let's assign it to this newly created app pool called Test App Pool. Okay? And that is going to be a simple matter, as we mentioned in the previous slide, of using the adctil set command. Now, why is my copy not working here? Quick edit. There we go. Okay, quick edit. Real briefly, if you go to the app pool the properties of the command window and go to options, quick edit mode allows you to right-click, copy and paste, highlight in command window. You probably know that. Super handy. I just very quickly copied from this text file and pasted into the command window here. So what we're going to do is we're going to adctil set Windows, the app pool ID property of Windows, and we're going to assign that property test app pool. Okay, and this is on a production web server, as I mentioned. So here we go. Change the app pool. And app pool ID is now test app pool. So let's get the Windows app pool ID, just dot key up, and run the command that we previously ran. And now you see the Windows app pool ID, which is previously Windows, now been set to test app pool. Okay, so what does that mean? Now, obviously, the www.microsoft.com/windows website gets a fair bit of traffic. So my hunch would be that we dot key back up and re-ran the IaaS app, so we're probably going to see a worker process now spun up, which we didn't see before, for the test app pool. Let's take a look. And sure enough, bang, we've got the test app pool now spun up because it actually has an app pool, you know, assigned to it. And so, we've got load on this, web app, and the worker process at 1,000 times, the W3WP exit, is now spun up.
Hey, Jeff, I have to ask this. Does management know you're doing this?
Does management know?
Yeah. On the production server?
No. They don't. Well, some of my meeting managers know, I guess, but would that Bill know? Probably not. But I think it's interesting. We want to highlight, the real world aspect without obviously giving away too much information about our.
This is great because that answers that question that customers are always asking, which is what really requires a recycle, what really doesn't, what requires an IS reset, all these different questions. And you're doing all this work, and you're not affecting the IS service as is on the production environment, minus that small piece that you're actually playing with.
Exactly. If I rerun this net set here again, you see we've got, 3,500, port 80 connections, TCP connections to port 80 on this box. So, we're definitely under full load here. And, with regard to actually creating a new app pool on the fly and how to take load like this, we've played around with, and I'm going to mention this a little later, the IIS CNFG, script. IIS config, we refer to it, but IIS CNFG is a means where you can export, certain nodes from a metadata and then import them to, to a different, metadata on a different web server. And, the IIS config script is really to be used for blocks that are not in production. IIS config, for instance, if we, created a new app pool on a sort of a golden pre-production server and exported it to this block here, and then assigned an app pool to it, and I'm not really, I don't want to get into the technical reason why, but it will not actually start taking load. You actually need to recycle, the full web service in order for that to work. But ADC Pool allows you to create the app pool, very quickly assign app pool membership, and bang, it's taken load. So very handy. If you think about this, if you use that ADC Pool create script with the dash F flag and run it on a whole pile of remote servers, you can instantly blast out an app pool, a new app pool across a web cluster, and then use the ADC Pool set command to assign app pool membership, again with the dash F command to a web application across the whole cluster through this newly created app pool, and instantly you're taking load of a new app pool. Very handy for, you got problem applications, you need to isolate them very quickly. If you're doing some troubleshooting and you need to connect a debugger to a specific worker process, and you want to make sure that only a particular application you're debugging is, in this app pool, really handy, okay? And definitely one of the most commonly used scripts that we use in Microsoft.com. What else should we get to in this demo here? I think I want to also show you the recycle app pool script that Chris just mentioned. So, we've got we'll touch base on this in just a few slides, but actually while I've got the screen open here, this recycle app pool.bbs script, which is available, I can run it on a neighboring web server supplying the argument of the server on which we want to cycle the app pool and the particular app pool. And if we don't specify the app pool, it'll recycle all the applications on this server. But with this recycle, just the Windows application on a neighboring box. Here you go. We just recycled the Windows app pool on this server. And we can either open up the event viewer and connect to that box and take a look in the system event log, or we can use a handy, very extremely handy script. Actually, there's going to be a full webcast devoted to just this command here, coming up by Jeff Johnson, a member in our team, who's a real hotshot debugger. I highly recommend that you tune in for the log parser talk in a couple of days. I'm not sure when that is exactly, but Chris can provide that info at the tail end.
That'll be Friday.
Okay. So here's just a quick snippet of usage of a log parser. So we've just remotely recycled this app pool, and I just want to dump out the system event log on this box, the event ID 1079, that's the event ID associated with Apple Recycles, and we're going to order it by time written descending, so hopefully the most recent one, it should be the Apple Recycle that we've initiated, will appear at the top, and log parser just takes, you know, if we can, with log parser, we can parse, you know, any type of log, IS log, event log, netmon files, you know, even the file system, any text file with columns, you know, fields, you can actually run SQL-like syntax. So notice that select all from, you know, where and order by. One of the most incredibly useful, powerful utilities for analyzing logs, files, you know, file systems. Let's run this command here on this remote box. And let's scroll over here. I'm not sure if you'll see all of this output. But there we go. The very top item is Windows. An administrator has requested a recycle of all worker processes in an application pool Windows. So that was done remotely. And if you look at the time, the story was one we just did, 10:22. And that was just that. So, incredibly, a couple real handy utilities here. I just wanted to give you a quick demo of some of the, you know, interesting. That was a management scripting task right there. And I guess we touched on the previous slide before the demo on actually AppPool properties, an AppPool property that we often modify. And again, it's based on, you know, real foundational analysis. We don't just kind of randomly tweak these values. But the periodic restart memory value is this virtual memory value that I mentioned that we, in Microsoft.com, cycle our application, or tell our application tools to automatically recycle based on this virtual memory threshold. So I've done the ADSUtil get command. Once again, the web server, the app pools node, and it's a global property for all app pools. Okay? If we had a particular application pool, say for instance, this test app pool that we wanted to modify its virtual memory recycling threshold, we would just insert in this command here. If we wanted to view that, we would do w3fcc app pools/test app pool/periodic restart memory. Okay? And let me just demonstrate the for command really quickly too. The for command that I mentioned, here it is. Let me get this copy of words here. So the for command that I mentioned, we've got a text file here, this www.tuck2.txt. I actually typed that out here just so you can see what we're supplying the for script. It's actually a listing of a whole pile of servers. And if we run this in conjunction with the ADSUtil get command of the periodic restart memory, virtual memory recycling threshold, in conjunction with the -S flag for ADSUtil, as I showed you before, we're actually going to get this ADSUtil command to run on each of these 8 servers. And I'll just run it right now, and we'll get this value. So you see it run, value for 11, value for the 12 server, value for number 13 server, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. So very quickly, boom, we scripted out, basically the reading the value from multiple boxes, right, which is, you know, super, super time efficient. We wanted to reset that value. I'm not sure if you can see on the screen here. At the very bottom, we would just run the ADSUtil set command, and we would supply a different value for periodic restart memory. So we could also, you know, run this set command in conjunction with a /F loop and very quickly tattoo that value consistently across a whole group of remote servers. So super time saving. So anyways, that was just a quick taste of some of the scripting that I just mentioned. And let's get back to the presentation here. I'm going to just touch on a few other scripting tasks that we commonly do in Microsoft.com and some of the utilities that we use to make these changes quite efficient.
One of the key tasks that we do is SSL certs configuration. Many administrators manage SSL certificates manually, which can be quite difficult. We make it a fair bit easier by using the IS6 resource kit script called iscertdeploy.vds to import and bind existing certificates to the IS website. And once again, in the final resource slide in this webcast, there's a web link to the IS6 resource kit documentation and download. So dig into that for a lot more detailed information about the iscertdeploy.vds. This iscertdeploy.vds is a tool for deploying and for backing up SSL certificates on servers that run IS6. You can use iscertdeploy.vds to deploy certificates to a local server, to a cluster of servers, or to remote servers. You can also use iscertdeploy.vds to back up a certificate by exporting the certificate from a website to a personal information exchange or .pfx file that contains both the private key and the public key. One quick mention, I'm not sure if this has changed, but you see the dash Q on, that's the quiet flag, and I think in our experience at Microsoft.com that maybe it's, I don't know how I'm interpreting it, but logically you'd think that dash Q on would turn on quiet mode. If you're running it inside a build script, for instance, you didn't want it to pop up, the information and prompts and whatnot. But actually, so I've got it listed as dash Q on, but in our build scripts, we actually use dash Q off to turn on quiet mode. So, it may just be the way we're misinterpreting how that flag has been spelled out, but just a handy little tip.
Hey, Jeff, I can just interject just one real quick thing about this utility. Often you mentioned that they that you use it for backup purposes, and I say there's a couple of main things that we see customers doing often when they're doing their backup strategies is, number one, they don't use any mechanism to do SSL certificates, which, according to a lot of the certificate authorities, their legal agreement allows them to charge you again to replace that certificate if, for some reason, a disaster occurred and you lost that. So, number one, certainly back these up. And then, as you mentioned here, is often customers don't realize the capability of being able to export with the private key. We often talk to them and say, yes, I used it, but they didn't do it, an export with that private key. That's going to be needed in the case of a disaster recovery situation. So those are the two things that I highly recommend people investigate with this iscertdeploy.vds. And just to add on to what you were saying, that we see as a top issue that our customers often hit us here at Microsoft with.
Yeah, excellent point, Chris. Definitely these, backups of your certs can't be overstated. Super important. So very handy utility, honestly. The goodness that came with IS6 release, the sheer, and it was just built completely, it was just like, there's so many utilities, there's so many ways in which made our lives easier. So the IS cert deploy, totally handy script. So another scripting task that we do fairly frequently, especially with the constant revving of applications on busy sites like www.microsoft.com, is registering assemblies in the .NET Framework Global Assembly Cache. So not sure if you've entered the .NET world yet, but we've been here for quite a while. It is definitely a very powerful platform, super for developers. I think some of the administration and the management, definitely has come a long way since the first few versions. We've just released .NET Framework 2.0, otherwise codename known as Windy. Not sure if you're in this world yet, but one of the common tasks is in .NET, in order to share .NET assemblies with multiple applications that are installed on the same machine, these .NET assemblies need to be installed as shared assemblies in what's known as a Global Assembly Cache, or GAC. And there's a utility that comes with the .NET Framework install called gacutil.exe. And this utility is used to install
and uninstall assemblies to and from the GAC. In order to centrally deploy a DLL to the GAC on multiple remote web servers, you can actually run GACutils.exe from any good remote execute utility, such as remote exec, remote execute, or sysinternals psexec, which is a favorite in Microsoft.com. GACutils, unfortunately, doesn't have a flag for remote deployment. It does come with an API that actually you could use, and we have used, to create a remote GAC script. But there can be issues that arise running that remotely. Some of the policy files and whatnot, some of the GACing can be a little tricky. So we find it's just better to run, you know, the actual GACutils command locally on the box with the use of our good remote execute utility. By default, GACutils and .exe and msvcr71.dll, which is actually needed for GACutils to run, achieve runtime, are found in the system root microsoft.net/framework/framework-version folder, which is not included by default in the system path. So if you want to run GACutils, as I mentioned before, if you've got a local utility folder on each server, you know, just drop GACutils there and add it to the path, or even better, the central remote utilities share for your whole environment, right? So if you had you could be able to call to it via //, or, you know, whatever the remote server name is, /, you know, remote bin dollar, or some central, you know, lockdown utilities share, lockdown with permissions, and you include that share in the system path, then that's actually a good way of accessing this and other you know, important administrative utilities. So that's a kind of best practice from Microsoft.com. The following command line will actually register the assembly filename.dll in the global assembly path on each server in the machines.txt file. Again, make use of some of the same command lines and utilities that we've mentioned over the past few slides. The /f loop, the %i is a variable which gets applied, in this case, to the psexec command. And we've got the machine.txt file, which has the space delimited list of whatever servers you want to register this DLL as a GAC on. And the if argument being supplied with a GACutil actually forces the install of the DLL. So if there's a current version of file name DLL on the GAC, it will just force this file name.dll to be installed in the GAC in place of the previous version. So again, GACutil.exe, just like most commands, backslash question mark will pull up the full syntax and use of this handy command. So once these assemblies are in the GAC, they can now be used from any application on the web server, regardless of their physical location or app pool membership. Okay, and URL scan. URL scan is a SAPI filter that will block anomalous or predefined requests to your server. By blocking specific HTTP requests, the URL scan utility helps prevent potentially harmful requests from reaching the server. And also, as a side benefit of blocking these harmful requests, they don't actually get processed by the web server. So there's a performance benefit in just having these requests hit HTTP, the super low-level HTTP, you know, the kernel, and just drop them. So this filter is absolutely recommended with IS5. And while there has been some debate in the field as to whether or not it's required with IS6, at Microsoft.com, we make this a standard part of every website configuration. URL scan.vbs is a script developed internally by Microsoft.com engineers that automates deployment of the URL scan ISAPI filter and the accompanying configuration.ini file needed to configure URL scan. The URL scan setup by VBS code is included in the download slide in the appendix at the end of this webcast, along with the recycle appcool.vbs that I mentioned previously. Also in the resources slide in the appendix is a web link to more detailed info pertaining to URL scan
and the ways in which it can be configured. So very handy. And I should also mention that URLscan outputs logs that we save on our servers. So not only is it dropping these harmful or malformed requests or requests that don't meet specific criteria that we can specify in the configuration.ini file, but we can actually go back historically and view sort of what types of traffic that's met these disallowed criteria have been thrown at our web servers. So excellent for any sort of analysis or understanding of the type of traffic coming at us, traffic that we're saying goodbye to. And what's beautiful about a URL scan setup is you can also configure the INI file to put it in learning mode, so it's not actually sending the request away, but it's logging what it would have thrown away. So it's very easy for you to, understand the behavior characteristics before having to actually bounce the request and disallow them. So that way you can kind of tune it beforehand and make sure you don't actually accidentally say goodbye to actually valid traffic.
Hey, Jeff, I got to ask you a quick question about that strikes me as unique. Any particular reason that Microsoft.com chooses to, instead of deploy that globally, to do it per site, which it looks like you're doing here, the URL scan filter?
Oh, excellent question. Yeah, actually, on a site, every site has, completely different characteristics, right? Our practice, we always recommend this, is to lock down as much as you can by default, right? So if we've got a particular website that only serves, a few specific file types, for instance, maybe it only serves, three or four file types and uses only a few HTTP verbs, for instance, you want to lock that site down to only allow those specific types. But if you've got another neighboring site, that has an expanded set of file types that it needs to serve and, use a different set of HTTP verbs, well, you're going to want to lock down the allowed requests to that site, specific, characteristics. So, there's all sorts of tuning. Some sites will serve, will only serve very small requests, so you can actually lock down the maximum payload that can actually be, requested to a very small value or sent or, received or posted back, right? So depending on the characteristics of that site, you can very granularly lock down, the behavior that's circumscribed in that .ini file. So we have some, some sites that perform, so www.microsoft.com has obviously one of the, broadest range of different file types that get served. And so we allow, the disallowed file list is actually much different on that site than maybe on a site that served a very specific type of traffic and performed a very, constrained functionality. So based on the behavior, you want to lock down, take a look inside the configuration.ini file available with URL scan. And it's available to be downloaded at download.microsoft.com. Just type in URL scan. Version 2.5 is the newest version. So we globally deploy URL scan, but the configuration.ini file that gets deployed is site-specific. I guess that's what I should make clear, right? So each site owner in Microsoft.com, locks down in as much as they can, based on the characteristics of their site. So good question. But yeah, now that we've seen all the basic settings we use when configuring web servers in Microsoft.com, you can begin to script all of your site-specific options in preparation for deployment. A key point is to make sure to document all your configuration settings and institute a solid plan to track feature changes. So, when we're using commands like adsutils to blast out a brand new app pool across the site, well, this site-specific build script that I previously mentioned, we're going to bake in that script, or, at least the configuration of that app pool into that script. So if we build a block tomorrow, a brand new www.microsoft.com web server, it would have that configuration change that we just pushed out on the fly. So that's really important, to maintain tight control of your site configuration, but be able to have that, plan to track these changes for future build. Okay, so
Deploying configurations to the enterprise, once we've configured a golden image of a server, for instance, a pre-production box, not in the internet, but we've used with AZ2Kill and some of these other various utilities and scripting commands that I've mentioned, and configured a golden image of our server, it's important to make sure that we've tested the site functionality, you know, all the various components and applications on the box, and verified through analyzing event logs, IIS web logs, performance monitor, etc., that everything is functioning as expected. So once you've verified, you know that the behavior is as expected. In Microsoft.com, we always deploy the golden image to a pre-production environment to ensure everything is functioning properly prior to deploying to a full production site. Okay? Once we have validated the scripting image, we publish the hosted web content and code to an NOB web cluster and synchronize the IIS metadata. So as mentioned, IIS metadata synchronization is not all that easy in IIS 6. You know, we have the ability now to, you know, edit in an XML format for the IIS metadata, but it's not as simple as just taking that metadata and copying out to another box that's in production. Can't be done. There's no way to do that currently right now. That a box that's taking requests, we cannot just replace its, you know, entire metadata and not have an interruption in service. These steps on the side here are some of the basic ways in which we can get the metadata from this golden pre-production box to a live production server. Publishing content, I guess, is the basic first step when we're deploying a box. You know, everything under the actual web root needs to be copied from this golden box to your production clusters. We use the following command that I'm going to highlight here. Again, this ubiquitous for loop. And once again, slash F is only one of the options. There's slash R, slash B, slash L, all allow you to do different things in terms of supplying variables to the command that you're telling it to run. The for command, in this case, is actually running xcopy on, you know, the remote server share, taking this golden source server share and copying that data to our remote server's web root. So the %i is the variable that gets replaced with the listing of servers in the server.txt, just as we've seen. Okay, but then onto the IIS metadata, we've got this utility that shipped with IIS 6 called IISCNFG.vds, which I've mentioned in the previous few slides. The IISCNFG.vds script allows you to export an IIS metadata configuration to an XML file and then deploy or import those settings to a remote server. So a few of the parameters we'll use with this command include slash fp, which specifies the metadata path of the website, slash children, which is used to export all subkeys of that configuration path, and slash inherited, which is used to include inherited properties of the exported file. So the global and site-specific build scripts mentioned earlier can simply embed the IISCNFG.vds script and actually perform the metadata sync up if needed as part of the build script. And I guess the key note that I just want to highlight is, I mentioned it before, but IISCNFG cannot be used to synchronize the full IIS metadata while target servers are under load. So make sure that these boxes that you're synchronizing the metadata on are out of rotation, or else we're going to have interruption in HTTP listener, and we're going to drop a request. So, IISConfig allows you, like I said, to export your, you know, good, known good, golden metadata to an XML file, and here's the command that we use to do that. So we do a slash export, and we can specify specifically the path of the metadata that we want to export. We want to make sure that all the children below that path and all the inherited properties get exported as well. That's the first step. The second step involves actually copying this
XML file, which contains all these, you know, all the metadata settings to the target web servers. And then, again, with the for loop, we run the isconfig/import command, which allows you to pull in that script that we outputted, as you previously saw, as is6xml. We're importing is.xml along with the same, you know, flags to tell us that we want that portion of the XML file of the metadata, all children and the inherited properties, into the target production metadata. Mm-hmm. And we also have the option of the is/copy command, which allows you to you know, skip the actual XML file and just import the, you know, the metadata directly into the target server. Now, the key thing I should mention also with isconfig is that the metadata can and often does contain, you know, certain server-specific components. So know your metadata. Know where you have particular encryption values, you know, particular iUser anonymous accounts that the web server runs under that are specific to that machine. Know what is machine-specific and only import the specific, you know, or the generic values, the generic configuration that can be applied to all web servers. A handy utility, very, very quick way to sync up IS web server metadata. So once the content and metadata settings have been synchronized on the target cluster of servers, make sure that you test the servers to ensure everything is working as expected, as previously mentioned. Also key is to make sure that you have the appropriate level of monitoring in place. This includes application monitoring, IS log monitoring, event log monitoring, all to catch any problems that may arise. Logparser.exe, as previously mentioned, is an incredibly useful utility that can be used to very quickly analyze IS logs, event logs, network monitor output, etc. MSCOM uses logparser.exe very extensively, as it allows us to very quickly get data regarding server behavior from IS logs, things including HTTP error rates, you know, how many 403s or 500s are we throwing, and on which URLs, time taken for requests, request rates, you know, like if someone asks me, hey, listen, for my particular application on Microsoft.com, you know, what are the request rates? Well, we know what the request rates to the overall server are. It's easy to get through a performance monitor, you know, connections per second, or requests per second. But, you know, for a particular viewer to web app, how do you get that information? Well, it's easy with log parser. I mean, you can actually just roll up, you know, using that same SQL style syntax that I highlighted earlier. And, you know, for example, the slash Windows view and roll up and get, you know, specifically for each hour log, or a day or whatever range of logs that you retain on your server, you know, roll them up and get the specific rates per second. You can actually use the quantized feature of log parser to get time slice buckets of the requests. I highly recommend you tune in for Friday's webcast on Log Parser with Jeff Johnson. By far, one of the most useful utilities. You really want to apply engineering, true engineering, to the management of your web server and the analysis. Log Parser is an absolutely indispensable tool, especially on a site that's, you know, with a scale of some of the Microsoft.com sites. I mean, these logs, the hourly logs, that we're talking, you know, hundreds of megs, right? So we need to be able to, you know, get through that information very quickly. Another key utility that makes life in Microsoft.com a lot easier is wfetch.exe, which is it's basically an HTTP client with a GUI. You can use wfetch to test or to troubleshoot HTTP servers. Wfetch displays the request and the response, so that the communication can be easily understood, the client and server side of the HTTP communication. You can use wfetch to create HTTP requests that test the performance of brand new websites, for instance. So if you're verifying, you know, at the, you know, the golden box is performing as expected, wfetch is a very handy utility. Because it provides only HTTP connection information, you can analyze and troubleshoot HTTP performance issues much faster using wfetch than by running a full network monitor trace where, you know, you get the full TCP handshaking and whatnot.
So if you're just interested in understanding HTTP behavior, WSpec, I believe this is available externally, the Fiddler utility. A lot of these utilities, Fiddler, I believe, is available for download. Plug into IE, you run the request, and you just see the entire HTTP conversation. Super handy. Again, I can't emphasize enough, the IIS6 resource kit. Both these utilities are included with this resource kit, and there's a link to this resource kit available in the appendix at the end of this webcast.
Hey, Jeff, I'm going to go ahead and add into there as well, as we soon we'll be releasing an update to the IIS Diagnostics Toolkit, of which, going on into the future, each one of these tools, next revision, will be in there. And we hope to have that done here very soon, but that should have WFetch 1.4, which has some of the bug fix, and a couple of additional things, as well as an log parser 2.2. So if you keep your eye out, instead of for IIS6 resource kit, we're going more towards the diagnostics aspect of it, and you can get those in IIS Diagnostics Toolkit.
Perfect. That'll be available for download on the Microsoft Home Download Center?
Absolutely, absolutely. Here in the next, hopefully in the next few weeks.
Oh, perfect. Okay, stay tuned, everyone. We've actually seen some of these utilities that are coming, so lots of good stuff coming. And before I get into the final section on management scripting, I'm not sure, you know, whether, you know, the folks that are listening, or if you're running IS5, you know, still on the Windows 8 platform, if you're on IS6, and IS6 may be fairly new to you. I mean, believe me, IS6 is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to life in web, you know, as a web administrator. But IS7, some of the stuff that we've seen, and some of the feedback that we've been able to give to the IIS team, and they've been just, you know, just gracious and open in accepting, you know, the feedback from this real-world production web server team that runs their products, early adopts them. You know, they've been great partner, you know, two-way relationship between our team and the IIS group. And some of the features and utilities, you know, scripting tools available with IIS7 are going to be pretty cool. So definitely stay tuned for that. I'm not going to give away too much, but just know, apart from the fact I mentioned the configuration, we'll soon be able to be actually just copied from server to server. We will be seeing some very cool scripting improvements. And, you know, everything from changes to the way some of the things are reported in the log files, some of the fields that will be available as web administrators, there's going to be a lot of goodness coming in 7, so stay tuned for that. So anyway, back on track to the final section, real brief section, just on management scripting. So everything we've scripted so far has been configuration scripting. We're changing a value on a server, we're changing an actual setting. And management scripting is exactly what it sounds. It involves commands that perform an action, but don't necessarily result in a server configuration change. So a couple of real quick things that we, you know, script out in management-wise. Some of the day-to-day administrative tasks that arise, you know, once your sites have been configured and handling live traffic, are things like managing the state of the web services and cycling IIS app pools. So managing web service state is, again, another task that can be performed with this incredibly useful ADCtil the VBS command. It allows you to handle these tasks with total ease. I mean, we've got the start server option. It also includes stop server, pause server, and continue server. So again, all the switches and flags that we've discussed previously, the four commands with a slash F switch, the dash F command to specify remote servers on which to start the server. In this command down here, we're starting the web service on the first site of the web server on the remote servers. It's specified in the servers.txt file. So super handy command. As Chris alluded to, and we mentioned previously, and I think I displayed in the demo, we've cooked up a quick little script called recycleapppools.vbs. This is recycling application pools is another management task that is often needed to be performed on a remote server or a cluster of servers. And we've used Windows Management Interface or WMI code to create a custom script called recycleapppools.vbs. Again, linked to from the MS Code download slide in the appendix at the end of this webcast. So using this script, you can remotely recycle a specific application pool on a remote server. If you don't specify a specific application pool in the command line, by default, all app pools on the web server will be recycled. And if you go look inside, download and look inside that script, there's a time value in between each application pool that gets recycled. So there's a 5-second pause in between the cycling of each application pool. I think it's a millisecond, so it says 5,000. That's scrutable. You sometimes, you know, as I mentioned before, there's inertia associated with reloading an app pool. It's actually probably the worst case performance scenario for any web server block is when an application pool recycles. So you don't, if you got a whole pile of app pools in a block, you don't want them just, you know, cycling too quickly on the heels of each other. You'd like often to implement a bit of a pause in between if you need to recycle all of them. Most commonly, however, you're going to use the get command, find the specific app pool that maybe a problem application or application that needs to have its app pool recycled is a member of. Once you know what that app pool is, using the get command, you specify that server and that specific app pool name as arguments to the recycle app pool command, and bang, that specific app pool is recycled. And if you use a for loop and a TXT file with a list of servers, you're recycling the app pool across the entire property. So that pretty much wraps it up. I've got, you've seen the basic settings we use when configuring web servers in Microsoft.com. Now you can begin to script all the site-specific options in preparation for deployment. The key takeaways are scripting, take time to, you know, understand what commands are available, figure out what you're doing repeatedly, figure out how to script it. It's going to save you time, and it's going to make sure that your web server builds are consistent. And there's nothing more important than a consistent build. Even if you've got a mistake, it's important that the mistake is consistent across the site, and, you know, then you've got one boss that's inconsistently wrong, right? You know, then troubleshooting is tough, right? But if you got the, you know, slightly wrong configuration value tattooed across the entire site, at least, you know, it's consistent. And troubleshooting allows you to zero in on it, especially if you've got multiple servers. So consistency is key. Make sure that you test changes in internal environments before getting them out in production. You've got to know what the behavior is before it hits live traffic. We all know we can't have failing websites in production. A lot of these utilities like WFetch, you know, hit these websites, make sure that they're responding in the way that they're expected to. Use log parser, exe, and to analyze IS logs and event logs. Make sure that there's no error codes being thrown or exceptions being popped up, especially by the .NET framework. Can't overemphasize, you got to have a plan to track these changes. And for us, our build script is a means, a self-documenting means of tracking changes. So we push out a change on the fly through the site. We bake those changes back into these site-specific and global-specific build scripts as appropriate. And that's our means for making sure that any block is built in the future look and behave exactly the same way. So real quickly, we've got the appendix. We've got the MS Code download link here. There's a couple of scripts there that we took up, the Recycle App Pool of VBS. WMI script, and as well, we've got the URL scan code to automate deployment. And here's a number of resources that dig a little more in detail into some of the utilities. ADC Kill, super handy, isconfig. I know Chris mentioned it earlier, but I really need to emphasize MSCOM. You've heard probably a lot more from MSN in the past, but, you know, we've just now started to really get involved in, you know, sharing our story, our gotchas, tips and tricks, some of our experiences deploying, you know, new technologies like WIDBI, you know, .NET Framework 2.0, our 64-bit deployment, which is super interesting, our usage of various utilities like Log Parser. All that is up there on this blogs.technet.com/mscom. It's a great forum to get, you know, regularly updated stories from the MSCOM engineering team for web and database. And we are so interested in hearing back from you guys. And, you know, we've got a lot of these best practices, but we are also a team that definitely admits that we don't know it all. We're constantly learning. We're always interested in hearing how other customers who run sites that may have different characteristics or even other customers that have faced or challenges
we've approached differently and may have, we've talked to so many folks that have given us a lot of feedback already on ways in which they administer sites, monitor, troubleshoot, some of the security tips and tricks and whatnot. Definitely interested in hearing feedback from each and every one of you. And I think there's a lot of good information there. I've worked outside Microsoft.com previously for various mom-and-pop shops and, even some other big companies. And getting access to engineering information, operations information, it's really tough. There's a ton of information on MSDN for developers, tons of code for scripting, but real hardcore ops knowledge is something that's kind of been passed on from mouth to mouth and, a guru or someone. But we're doing our best to get our story out there on the blogs, on TechNet Magazine is going to carry a scripting article in the November-December edition. I think our 64-bit deployment story is going to be in the January edition. So stay tuned for lots more good information from Microsoft.com. And like I said, we want to hear from you. We kind of treat this as definitely a two-way dialogue. So send us your questions. And it's been great talking to you. I really enjoyed the chance to share some of the information we're lucky to be able to have being on the inside at Microsoft.com. Chris, back to you.
All right. Awesome, Jeff. I do appreciate all this wonderful information that you've given to our customers. I want to take the opportunity here, for those that don't know, in about 25 minutes, we'll be going back on the air. It's almost a full day of IS stuff. With a presentation, Finding IaaS Bottlenecks using Server Performance Advisor 2.0 and IaaS 6.0. I will be actually presenting that along with the developer for our SPA 2.0, Chris Davis. So come on over if you want to. Grab a bite to eat if you're on the West Coast. If you're on the East Coast, just go ahead and grab you a pop and hit the restroom and come on over to that room, and we'll teach you a little bit about SPA 2.0 and IaaS 6.0. But first and foremost, I want to thank Jeff and the crew at Microsoft.com for helping us deliver a awesome presentation today, answering those vital questions that everybody asks. How does Microsoft.com use IaaS and deploy it in such a large-scale fashion in the enterprise? But I want to go ahead and make sure that you pay attention to, in your window there, I have an actual view of your browser, that you can see the upcoming webcast in this series with Microsoft.com engineers. Those are including change and release management strategies with Microsoft.com operations. Make sure you sign up and come and attend that tomorrow, as well as we'll also be talking about monitoring, managing an enterprise platform with Microsoft.com, as well as troubleshooting and debugging, where we, as Jeff mentioned, we'll be talking about, as one thing, log parser, and how you can use that to really mine large amounts of data and find out what's going on in your enterprise. But with that said, I'm going to go ahead and say thank you to everyone who has attended today. Hopefully I'll see you very, very soon in another location, as well as I'm going to turn it back over to Jason and let him do some housekeeping.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Okay, just really quick, I hope folks can stick around for just a couple more minutes before you jump on to the next IaaS event. We're all heading over there, so you'll beat us there if you head over now. I hope you'll take a second and fill out this survey that we got coming up in just a moment. Filling out that survey will give us some valuable feedback, get that back to Jeff and Chris and the rest of our IaaS team. But also, you're entered to win this Creative Zone Portable Media Center. We give away 10 of these a month across the webcast program, and the more times you enter, of course, the more times, the more chances you have to win. So please take a second, give us some feedback on today's session. The survey is going to be coming up here in just a moment in the slide area. And I'm going to go ahead and flip to that now. Yeah, this is actually a web page like the one that Chris loaded, but all the links on here are hot. So what I suggest you do is click on Registered Online. It's about midway down that page. Click on that, confirm your registration information, and then fill out the series of questions. There's a couple about product interest, but also about saved content. And that's what we're really looking for. Let us know what you thought of the content today, what you expected to see, what you'd like to see. There's a text box for specific feedback, so if you want to put that in there, we'd really appreciate it. At this point, we are out of time. We have been taking questions the whole time, so hopefully you got your question answered. If there is one question in the queue, if there is one or two left, we'll probably take that via the text interface down there at the very bottom right. So be watching that space for the answer to your question. I want to thank Jeff as well as Chris and the rest of the Microsoft.com ops team for coming out today and helping out on presenting around configuration management of web farms. And thanks to all you folks for attending. Hopefully we'll see you in about 20 minutes or tomorrow. I believe tomorrow we start at 11:30 with the next in this series. But if not, thanks again for attending and have a great week.